From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of February, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalCommerce.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And we'll discuss the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Both of them, by the way, will be at the Spring Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on the 8th day of March. You can too. Registration is open right now at willag.org, willag.org. It's quick and simple and easy. Get yourself registered for the event. That's Tuesday, March 8th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And stay with us too for this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn settled at $6.20 a bushel. That was up 3 3/4 for the day. The May at 6.21 3/4, 4 1/2 higher. And December futures at 5.73 3/4, 5 1/2 higher. March soybeans, $15.53 up 9 1/4. The May contract at 5.57 1/2, 10 1/2 higher. November beans settled at $13.95 3/4, up 3 for the afternoon. Bean meal at $443.90, up $6.80. The bean oil at $65.36 on this Friday, down 39 cents. Wheat futures, soft red, up 11 1/2 cents, though it settled at $7.63 1/4 in the lead March, the hard red March, at $7.85 3/4, up 16 3/4 cents for the day. Live cattle futures at $146.87 1/2, 12 1/2 cents higher. Feeder cattle at $166.10, down 62 1/2 cents, and lean hogs at $100.07 1/2, $1.70 higher on the day. Crude oil futures at $92.28 a barrel, $1.99 higher. Diesel fuel up 3 6/10 cents at $2.87 1/2, and gasoline at $2.67 1/2. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss what's been happening in Chicago for the day and the week. Hi, Mike. How are you? Did you get very much snow there in Atchison?
No, we didn't, Todd, and it's getting pretty critical, especially west of me and south of me. I was on a conference call with a client in West Texas who also farms in New Mexico as well, and he was telling me he had talked to a friend of his north of him, and they were going to plant corn a full month early in Paris, Texas, and he's going to start next week because it's so dry. And my client was actually hitting the irrigation button in the middle of winter, and he said he literally could not remember the last time he had to do that. So it's getting critical, and I'm thinking maybe Friday we finally saw some of this critical issue with the weather and the drought monitor show up.
Well, tell me about how it showed up in Chicago and in what futures.
Well, you know, going into Friday's close, I had written copy on Thursday night to clients saying, look, there's something wrong here. I mean, we've got a situation where crude oil is hitting its highest level in 7+ years. It's going up now a 7th straight week in a row. And it's essentially in the last 3 months, Todd, since its low in December, it's been able to rally 50% thereabouts. And soybeans have been able to follow really nicely, up about around 30%, thanks in large part to the bean oil and, you know, lately the meal. But the wheat, and obviously the corn's pretty easily explained because of the wheat and corn connection, but the wheat was what was troubling me because even going into Friday's close versus the December lows, hard red wheat's actually down about a nickel. And, you know, soft red wheat's only up about 2%. So you've got an extreme so significant between the crude oil being at near 7+ year highs versus the wheat sitting at only about 2% higher on the last 3 months and testing that 735.5 monthly low from January, which is also the 2022 low. So that really caused me some consternation heading into the WASDE report next week, because wheat can be a real soft patch after USDA gets done talking.
Did you come up with any reasons for the disparity between the two?
I do think there is something going on when it comes to, especially when you factor in a weaker dollar here in the last week or so. I do think the market is starting, and wheat maybe is showing us that There's an issue between the geopolitics and the trade related to Russia and Ukraine and the United States. And the new element to this is the fact, and we know this now after Friday's news stories and publications by the Chinese Foreign Ministry, that Russia and China are tying themselves together in what they call a quote-unquote no-limits partnership between those two countries, and specifically talking about Ukraine. And so I think the stakes have just been raised dramatically. And when you get to this type of level, it makes sense why the crude oil would go up, but it also makes sense why the wheat and agriculture commodities would sit back and wonder if we're going to lose trade and see more protectionism down the road if things get worse and we turn this into an actual armed conflict in Ukraine. That's my sense right now.
Yeah, Vladimir Putin and President Xi sitting down this week, as you mentioned, they talked about trade and wheat specifically. I hadn't really thought about it in relationship to Ukraine, which is a primary growing region, but I guess that makes some sense. It could turn ugly fast.
Yeah, and the other thing that ties into this is, as you say, China lifted their restrictions on Russian wheat and barley imports overnight from all areas of Russia, and that was a brand new situation that developed. In addition to that, late in this session on Friday, and I think this helped propel the oil even higher, was that they have now tied together in a binding commitment with one another on energy, and it's a big number as far as billions of dollars of energy between the two countries. And this is the biggie to me, Todd. They're going to be priced in euros as far as the relationship in the natural gas and oil that flows between the two countries, and I think this created that increased volatility in the energy market.
And that brings us back to the trade issues that we have discussed over the last decade, especially the European Union being so very closely tied to China.
Yeah, and this is where it goes back to me and what we're doing to help the producers in Illinois and around the world, essentially, is think about $14 November beans hit this week, a 25-cent basis. As far as taking that off, a 60 bushel yield, you're looking at $825 potentially of gross revenue per acre. The last time we saw this in February was back in 2008. And one of the things I'm going to feature on this weekend's copy is we made a 1440 high in February of 2008. We then made a low of 1245. And by the time we closed out March, we were down to 1089 and a half. So I think we really got to start thinking about the downside when we get to these upper levels. And again, a 14-year high for the month of February when it comes to November beans.
Well, that's a good for the crop insurance setting, but not good unless you take advantage of the marketplace in some way. And I guess that's what you're going to write about this weekend then, huh?
Yeah, you and I have been talking about these cereal options in November beans and the puts, and I'm going to go ahead and pull the trigger on those before the WASDE report this next week, especially with wheat as my still very much my leader, and with the wheat weather and the hard red wheat belt getting worse, because Kansas, their drought now is almost 89% after this week. It's really snuck up on us. Last year at this time, it was only 60%. So when I think undervalue and I think of issues that could propel markets higher, it's more in the wheat complex than it is the soybean complex. So take advantage of this in one way, shape, or form, if you ask me.
How does the size of the soybean crop in South America, Brazil, Argentina, the other nations play into what you've told us about so far?
Yeah, it's going down. You know, the Buenos Aires Grains Exchange went down to 42 million tons in Argentina this week. USDA sitting at 46.5 as of January. Southern Brazil is not getting enough rain. So both Argentina and Brazil are having issues. It's interesting to me, Todd, because you've got USDA Argentine corn production sitting all the way up at 54 million tons. We have crop conditions on the drought maps and on the moisture maps worse than last year. And last year we could barely do 50 million tons. So here again, I think the corn is carrying a discount, especially with that no bean to corn ratio getting up to close to 2.45.
I love it that you make me think about world trade geography, geopolitics, and how things are moving across the planet, continent-wide, when you throw the euro in as the default currency for the Russia-China combination really makes me think. I'm awfully glad, too, that you will be at the Beef House on the 8th day of March for the first and the 31st, depending on how you look at it, of our events there. Will Ag and Farm Doc this time around. We'll have all the ag economists from the U of I, or most of them, there with us, and you as well. Should be a great day. People can sign up for that now at our website at willag.org. Thanks, Mike, for coming to help us do that.
Todd, you are more than welcome, and I really thank you for everything too, sir.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, and will join us at the Beef House on Tuesday, March the 8th, 2022. Not long away, just a month away now. And you can too. It's easy to do. Just visit our website at willag.org and you'll find a link to register today. The cost is just $25. We actually lowered the cost this year. Believe it or not, it's down. And you still get a Beef House roll and coffee in the morning and a Beef House lunch. All the ag economists that deal with commercial agriculture from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, the Farm Doc team, the Will Ag panelists like Mike Zuzulo and many others, they're all listed there today. You know, the close of the 2018 Farm Bill is upon us. That'll happen in 2023 or thereabouts. And Congress has started pre-Farm Bill oversight hearings for the next one to see what's working and what's not in that last bill before starting formal efforts on the future Farm Bill. Farm state lawmakers say popular programs like CRP, CSP, EQIP, RCCP, and others are working but need more money and some technical support, especially if combating climate change. FSA Chief Zach Ducheneau claimed early success before the House Ag Conservation Panel.
Specifically, we adjusted soil rental rates where data supported such an adjustment, increased payments for practice incentives, increased payments for water quality practices. We also added a climate smart practice incentive for CRP General and continuous signups to better leverage this program towards climate outcomes, including carbon sequestration.
All resulting in what he says is a better sign-up.
The total sign-up of 5.3 million acres surpassed USDA's 4 million acre goal and reversed a trend of decreasing enrollment. And we're especially happy with our sign-up for the grasslands program, 2.6 million acres.
Separately, the House Ag, Livestock, and Foreign Ag panel heard from cattle, dairy, poultry, and restaurant interest on sustainability in a pandemic world with a soaring population. California Dairymen and National Milk Producers Federation board member Melvin Medeiros urged better tailoring of conservation programs and technology tax breaks.
Dairy farmers see great value in adopting anaerobic digesters and to reduce emissions, but lack sustainable markets for this energy produced on farm and has limited their economical viability. Similar, new animal feed additives significantly reduce enteric emissions, but current U.S. policy hinders timely approval and puts U.S. farmers at a competitive disadvantage.
Still, Medeiros says a gallon of milk in 2017 used 30% less water, 21% less land, and had 19% smaller carbon footprint, and produced 20% less manure than it did in 2007. It's a Friday. We always talk with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible. Eric, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
Also, thank you for joining us in March on the 8th day. That's a Tuesday at the Beef House for our first spring outlook with the Farm Doc team, a continuation of the 30 years that we did of the All-Day Ag Outlook. You've done that meeting before. It'll be really quite the same, except that we'll have the Farm Doc team there with us all day long as well. It's $25. It's a great day. And we start with a Beef House roll. You get the lunch and we get to see you too. I appreciate that you come over and do that for us. It really means a lot to me.
Oh, it's one of my favorite things in the year, and I get well fed that day, so how could I complain?
It is not too bad. Hey, so I tweeted out this morning because I was looking outside, and it's just so gorgeous. There's a lot of sunshine. There's snow everywhere. And I said, you know, it was a rough 2 days. And nature is all sunshiny with its disposition now and wants to be forgiven. Can you recap this winter storm we just went through?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, the sunny disposition is compliments of a big Arctic high that's sitting over us now. And ultimately, that was the culprit, responsible for getting this all set up, because there was actually No low pressure system with this. Okay. It was just one great big long extended front that went from Texas all the way to Maine on the backside, Arctic air on the south side. We had just a constant flow out of the Gulf. It's the first time in a very long time, I think for the whole of January at least, that we saw winds in the jet stream level coming out of the southwest. And that brought in a lot of precipitation from Texas and then today through New England. Now, that's important, that mention of Texas, because that is an area that we watched for the previous almost 75 to 80 days get drier and drier and drier. Now, all of a sudden, the snow comes in, and there was actually quite a bit of rain in eastern Texas and Oklahoma, extremely heavy rains in the lower Mississippi River Valley, over through Alabama and into Georgia. And that's an area that had been getting drier. But did we cure the drought? Is it done? The answer to that, of course, is no. One system can't undo all of that. And so we're still watching drought. And listen, where this didn't hit was South Dakota, Nebraska, eastern or western Kansas. That's the area that still has very dry conditions. So we put a little bit of a Band-Aid on it, but it didn't go away. Now, here locally, yeah, we've got quite a bit of snow. I've heard snowfall ranges here in central Illinois that have been in the 6 to up to 15 plus inch range. And yeah, we're still got just a ton of it on the ground here, and it's very pretty, but we got to watch to see if our temperatures warm back up to melt that off anytime soon. Who didn't get the snow though is southern Wisconsin and parts of northern Illinois. And those are areas that if you look at that latest drought monitor do show up in drought. In fact, soil moisture values there are in that 2 to 5% range. And remember, that's all locked up because it's frozen right now. So there's some areas we got to be watching very carefully here. And by the way, this same storm system put down just a ton of ice down around Memphis and also just, severe weather down in Alabama. I mean, just a really, really powerful winter storm. And to be honest, Todd, I'm glad to see the tail end of it. I'm glad it's gone. Let's get back to it.
Well, you wanted to get your snow throwers out. I take it you did.
Oh, yeah. And they're both functioning. So, you know, what's funny is we went from almost record pace for the least amount of snow we've ever had through this point in the year. And now, technically, through this point in the year, we are above average. So there you go. One system took care of all of it. Hey, at least the Illini got an impressive win right in the middle of all that snow. So I was pretty excited about that.
You bet. What's the next 10 days look like for us in the Midwest?
Yeah. So the jet stream ridge is out in the west again. So our flow comes back out of the northwest. That loads up the pattern with a bunch of clippers, but they go to our north. So we're looking relatively dry all the way through at least Valentine's Day. That's at least my current outlook. And where things might get interesting is just a bit beyond Valentine's Day, maybe the 15th, 16th, 17th of this month. We need to be watching again for another system to come out of the southwest. But it's going to take a while before we even get to that point.
Let's switch language. La Nina.
Yeah. So when we think about what's going on in the Pacific as a whole, let's not just look at La Nina, but let's look north as well. We know the La Nina is fading, okay, but it does so very slowly. And at the same time, we still got that cold water in the Gulf of Alaska. So we now, you know, it's February. Let's start thinking about spring a little more intently here. And what I would have to say about this is that when you see the cold water in the Gulf of Alaska, that's a part of something called the negative phase of the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. When you have the cold in the equatorial region, we call it the negative phase of ENSO or La Nina, right? Okay, both of those things tend to give us wetter conditions east of the Mississippi River and a little bit drier west of the Mississippi River. So as we go into spring, that's going to be the background thought of all of this. But I want to watch those Gulf of Alaska water temperatures carefully because those are the temperatures, should they get colder and expand south, that start to give us real concern for drought development in the Midwest. So you're right. We got to talk about what's going on out there in the Pacific because it controls a lot of our weather here and is our only predictor long range anyway.
And finally, in South America, what do you see?
Yeah, well, we know that harvest pace and therefore planting pace of safrinha crop has been very fast in the north. We've had honestly a pretty almost ideal setup in Mato Grosso, the biggest producing state. Southern Brazil has had some drought relief, but it didn't undo some of the major problems that have happened there. In the forecast, southern Brazil and Argentina are going to go through another dry stretch of about 10, maybe 12 days, while eastern Brazil gets all the really, really heavy rains. I'm talking about like Bahia and Minas Gerais. Well, Mato Grosso, that big producing state, hits right on its averages. So I guess the main takeaway there is that the conditions coming up over the next couple of weeks for South America are only ideal really in one spot, and that's about 30% of the crop. I'd say the rest of it is dealing with less than ideal conditions moving forward.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agrible joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world. Hey, do visit our website at willag.org. Right now, you'll find some information there about the Spring Outlook. This is the Will Ag Farm Doc Spring Outlook. It's coming up at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on the 8th day of March. That's the Tuesday. It's the continuation of our March events that we've always had, and we'll add a whole new component. The Farm Doc team, the University of Illinois Agricultural Economist, is coming along for the ride this time around. You get the Farm Doc team, you get the panelists from WILL, the Beef House coffee and cinnamon rolls in the morning, and a Beef House lunch, and the cost went down. It's just $25. Get yourself registered today at willag.org or go directly to the registration page at go.illinois.edu/springoutlook. Spring Outlook is all one word, go.illinois.edu/springoutlook, or just willag.org for all the information. Up next, we'll hear from Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. He'll recap the week in Illinois and look forward to what the state might expect as it relates to weather. And then after that, for those of you who can stick around, we'll hear all of Commodity Week. It comes up in the second half hour on our home station. Many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend, and it's already up on the website at willag.org. That's Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. Our panelists this week included Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and Logan Kimmel of Roach Ag Marketing in Naperville, Illinois.
From the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute, this is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. Much like last year, February reminds us what winter weather can be like in Illinois. Temperatures this past week range from the high teens in northern Illinois to the mid-30s in southern Illinois, between 1 and 4 degrees below normal. Temperature-wise, February started much like January, as last month's average temperature was about 5 degrees below normal statewide. The big story from this last week was the winter weather that made its way through the state. Persistent moderate to heavy snowfall blanketed a large portion of Illinois, with three-day totals exceeding 10 inches from the St. Louis metro east area to Chicagoland. The highest totals exceeding 12 inches were across central and northern Illinois, including 13 inches in Peoria County and 15 inches in Livingston and Will counties. It was by far the largest snow event of the season so far, and the totals moved much of the state that was previously in a snow drought to near normal snow accumulation for the season. Meanwhile, as often happens with snowstorms in central and northern Illinois, parts of southern Illinois were brought the gift of a wintry mix, including some ice accumulation. Taking rain, freezing rain, sleet, and snow together, liquid precipitation totals from the week range from around 1 inch in southern Illinois to 1.5 to 2 inches in central and northern Illinois. This was quite a change from the bone-dry January, and many places in the state picked up more precipitation in the last 3 days than they did in the entire previous month. Alas, for those of you who do not like the snow, the outlooks have some good news. The latest 6 to 10 day outlook through the middle of the month show highest odds of drier than normal weather with temperatures near normal. However, the models keep winter weather active in the Midwest in the latter half of the month with strongly elevated odds of warmer than normal conditions in the last 2 weeks of February. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford wishing everyone a happy, healthy weekend.
And I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand whenever you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There you'll find our daily podcast programming, our Commodity Week program, which is a weekly podcast, the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast, information from the Agricultural Economist, the Farm Doc team here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, and a way to register for our Will Ag Farm Doc Spring Outlook. That's coming up Tuesday, the 8th day of March, at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It's just across the border from Danville, Illinois. It's a quick and simple drive. The cost is just $25.